All right, so we're continuing here our mini-series going through appropriate Tehillim that we recite in times of crisis. And today we're just going to do one, Perek Pei Gimel, and it's one which Skoki Yeshiva at least has been saying every single morning. Here at the shul we've been saying it every day between Mincha and Maariv, and that's Tehillim Pei Gimel, which is not on the classic list of like Tehillims that you say normally. It's not, you know, Esseinai al Haharim or Mimamakim or Maskela David, all of which will Limerus Hashem go through in the coming weeks. But Tehillim, particularly appropriate for times of war, it's really hard to top Pei Gimel. Maybe Chaf that we did last week, Lam Natzeach, right? Yancha B'Yom Tzara, we saw was clearly a parak of Tehillim addressing a time of war. Perek Pei Gimel, which we will do in depth this afternoon, it's wild to what degree it is appropriate for us right now. In the Amos Chacham, the author of the Dat Mikra commentary to Tehillim, so he has a theory about Tehillim. He says all Tehillim was written l'shaito and l'dore doros. Every Tehillim was written responding to a particular crisis at the moment, while at the same time being written for all time. So when David HaMelech is, you know, hiding from Shaul, he writes a parak of Tehillim addressing that particular moment as he's hiding in the cave, or that particular moment as he's hiding from Avshalom, or that particular moment as he's overcome with regret for the sin of Uri and Bathsheba. It's responding to that moment, while also being something which is written with Ruach HaKodesh to apply to similar situations for Bnei Yisrael for all time. As we'll see, this parak really is one where we can feel the Ruach HaKodesh, we can feel the Tehillim directly speaking to us here in the year Taf Shin Pei Dalet. The Mizmor itself, and I wonder if this is a coincidence, if you take out the first pasuk, because it's just Shir Mizmor Le'asaf, so you're left with 18 psukim. I wonder if it's a coincidence. I didn't see anybody talk about this, but somebody must point this out, that the Tehillim where we daven to Hashem to protect us in a time of war as 18 psukim, right? We're davening for life. the one way to divide up the parak is right between Pasuk Tes and Pasuk Yud. The parak begins with us asking Hashem to take action. He should not be silent. We'll look at this in detail in a minute. We tell Hashem his enemies are on the march, his enemies are attacking, and we daven to Hashem that he should get involved. Pasuk Zion through Tes, we survey many, many nations are coming after us. Then we turn to Pasuk Yud after we survey the danger. We say, here's what's happening. Here is who is attacking, right? The attacks, who's leading the attacks. Then Pasuk Yud, we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we say that he should answer the call and he should save us. We tell Hashem he's done this in the past, previous battles where Hashem saved us miraculously. That's what the Tehillim describes in Pasuk Yud through Pasuk Yud Gimel. And then the end of the Mizmor, Yud Dalet through Yud Tes, we turn from the times that Hashem saved us in ancient battles to the current crisis, and the climax of the Mizmor is that Hashem should interfere, Hashem should assault their enemies, and they'll learn the hard way that you don't mess with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's people. Okay, that's the overall structure of the Mizmor. Now let's just jump in. at one point, maybe before we start, it's unclear what exactly this Mizmor was written. When was it written, and what was the particular crisis that it was written for? A number of the Mefarshim, the Radak, the Malbim, my Siddur. If they open up my Siddur, so it has a little kotar, a little title on the top, and it says that this Mizmor was written by the King Yehoshaphat, addressing a battle described in Divrei Hayamim, Chelek Beis, Perek Chaf. Yehoshaphat, who is one of the righteous kings of Yehuda, he lives at the same time as King Ahav. So this is about 100 years after Shlomo. About 100 years after King Shlomo's, Yehoshaphat is around. The Pasuk in Divrei Hayyam describes a coalition of enemies attacks Yehuda. They go to the Beis HaMikdash to daven. Yehoshaphat has a whole tefillah. He says, you know, Hashem, this Beis HaMikdash was built for us to come to daven in times of crisis. We think of the Beis HaMikdash as something built for Karbanos, but the truth is, when Shlomo HaMelech dedicates the Beis HaMikdash, Mirz Hashem will get back to Sefer Malachim in the coming weeks or months, Shlomo builds it. He says, this is a place for us to come daven. So Yoshava Daven, he has a whole tefillah. Somebody in the crowd all of a sudden gets nevuah. He says the tefillah is going to be answered. Hashem is going to take care of it. The people, the enemies are going to fall out among themselves. Hashem is going to fight for you. And that indeed happens. So a number of the Mepharshim say that's the battle happening over here. Okay, option number one. We do this inside. We'll see the advantages and the disadvantages of that pshat. Now, the second pshat that's given in the Mepharshim is from the Sefarno. The Sefarno thinks that our Mizmor here is actually written for the Messianic era. The Navi Zechariah describes, we read it on Sukkot, how all the enemy nations are going to come surround Yerushalayim, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to show them that was a bad idea. The Sefarno thinks that this is what's being described. What's pushing the Sefarno to say that, as we'll see, it is we're being attacked on all sides. There are many, many, many enemies that are attacking us. It seems like more than just Yehoshaphat dealt with. So that's possibility two. This is from the time of Mashiach. The Dat Mikra gives two other proposals. One, he says maybe this is the time of King Shaul. King Shaul was described as fighting enemies on all sides. Or it could be that this Mizmor was not written for one particular battle. This Mizmor was actually written kind of looking at the broader sweep of the Jewish experience. And we've been attacked by Moab, we've been attacked by Ammon, we've been attacked by Amalek. And we tried to have one Mizmor to create like the universal Jewish experience when we get attacked by our enemies. That's the other approach he has. And we'll see, I think that one really does relate strongly to what we're going through right now. Mizmor begins, if we discount Pasuk Aleph, with Pasuk Beis, because this is really how it starts. and the Mizmor does not start slowly. Elohim al damilach al techarash va'al tishko el. God, do not be quiet, do not be silent, do not be mute, and do not be quiet. Hashem. So that's a very intense pasuk over there. First of all, right, I mean, starting out with a cry out to Hashem, right? It's not slow. God! There's urgency over here. There is real, real urgency. And we call out to Hashem twice in the same pasuk. We're desperate. And we can sense what is the experience that Bnei Yisrael have until now as our enemies are surrounding us and on the march and getting stronger and stronger. If we are begging HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al Damilach, Al Techarash, Al Tishko, don't be silent, don't hold your peace, don't be still. Until now, we're not seeing any answers. Right? We're seeing the enemies attacking from the north, the south, the east. They're coming from all directions, and we are not seeing any sign, any hint, anything from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Tehillim cries out, Elohim al damilach, do not. The Ibn Ezra points out, what name is used over here? This is going to be very important later on, but at least to one degree, the Ibn Ezra argues, the reason why we use the name Kael, Elohim, is because we're specifically reaching out to, all right, Hashem's attributes of justice and power, right? Kael means power. Love tells Yaakov, Yesh le'el yadi lasos imchem ra. I have the power to do evil to you, Lavan said to Yaakov. So we're reaching to Hashem's power, reaching to Hashem's justice, and we're saying, the times are unjust, we're being assaulted, this is unfair, we need Elohim. Come and show your power and crush our enemy. Even the way the Navi, I'm going to keep on saying that, even the Pasuk uses the word al sounds very, very similar to Kael, right? It's almost like we're saying God, right, many times in one Pasuk, even as we definitely have it at the beginning and we have it at the end. So we start off launching in. We're not being answered. We need help. Hashem, let's go. What's taking so long? You've helped us before. We have faith. We're having troubles with our faith. Come on. We need you to help. There's no one else who can do this. And it's time. Stop being silent. Stop being quiet. Let's go. What is taking so long?
We're desperate. We're urgent.
We don't understand what's taking so long. Okay. Then we have Gimel, Dalet, He, and Vav. And we have to put these all together. Already from Pasuk Gimel, the Tehillim here is making a very, very critical claim. Ki hinei oivecha yehemayun. Your enemies are in an uproar. Umisan echa nasu rosh. And those who hate you are daring to rise up, to raise up their heads. The critical claim the Tehillim is making here, whose enemies are these? Right? So you would think that they're B'nai Yisrael's enemies. You would think it would be Oyveinu, right? Hashem, save us. We're being attacked by our enemies. We're being attacked by those who hate us. But that's not the way the Tehillim says it over here. If they hate us, and we'll see the Mefarshim talk about this more going forward, but we are describing them as HaKadosh Baruch Hu's enemies. Hashem should get involved in the fight, because like it or not, he is involved in the fight. They're not attacking us, they're attacking him. And so he needs to fight, because he's not saving us, he needs to fight back. They are attacking you. The Tehillim is going to wrap Hashem and B'nai Yisrael together again and again. So let's see, Pasuk Dalet Hey and Vav. The reason why I put these red on the top and blue in the middle is look how the Tehillim interweaves Hashem and B'nai Yisrael. Pasuk Gimel, we had said, they're your enemies and they hate you. Then Pasuk Dalet, Al Amcha Ya'arimu Sod, right? They're crafting secrets against your nations. Vis Yo'atsu Al Tifunecha, and they are taking counsel against your treasures. Right now, who's the nation, who's the treasures? That's obviously B'nai Yisrael. So they're attacking B'nai Yisrael, they're attacking the treasures. One of the Mefarshim here, I forget who, says that this is the Chachamim. Right? They're not only attacking us militarily, but they're trying to prevent us from being able to keep Torah mitzvos. They're attacking the treasured ones of B'nai Yisrael who are trying to keep the Torah. They're attacking everything. But again, attacking Yisrael is an attack on your nation. We're not just any nation, we belong to you. Pasuk Hey, again, focusing on B'nai Yisrael, but through that, going to Hashem. Amru l'chu v'nachidei migoy, let's go and destroy them from being a nation. The lo yizacher shem Yisrael od. And the name Israel will not be mentioned again. Later on, we'll see why I bolded shem Yisrael. It's very important over here. But they're attacking Yisrael. But who is that really going up against? Ki noatzu lev yachdav, they've taken counsel together. Alecha bris yichrosu. This covenant that they've contracted, it's not a covenant just against us, or even primarily against us. Really, it's a covenant against the Kadosh Baruch. Thinking right now, the news reports about how the Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran all getting together to, you know, take counsel what they were going to do in Lebanon before the breakout of the attack. This is something which, you know, I just found personally relevant, right? They don't just attack us, they get together, they're plotting our destruction. One of the Mefarshim, I think it was the Radak, said, Nachidei Migoy cannot mean that we're going to not exist at all. It means we're not going to exist as a nation. We're going to be scattered around, so, you know, we're not like a single nation. We're going to be scattered. But the pshat is more than that, especially as we've come out of the Shoah, we know what, you know, our enemies are capable of doing. Tehillim could be read as literally a quest for genocide. They want us gone. Lo yizacher shem Yisrael od. The name of Israel is not going to be mentioned again. That is their goal. And again, that's not an attack on us. That is an attack on you. Alecha bris yichrosu. Radak has a comment, I put it here on the top of page 2, which I thought, again, one which like kind of scary how it captures our current reality. The pasuk said, "No atu lev yachdav." Right? They're coming together. They're conspiring together. So the Radak understands that there's a chiddush over here. You know, people on the same team. You don't need to go out of your way to say that people on the same team conspire together. That's the way that it is supposed to be, right? When the basketball team has to devise a play, so they don't conspire together. They just, you know, that's the team. When you're conspiring, understands the Radak. He says, "Af al pi shahayu nochamim ze'im ze ha'gayim ha'ele." Normally, these nations are all fighting each other. The Sunnis and the Shiites, right, they spend 1,500 years. They're killing each other every day of the week and twice on Tuesday. But what's happening now? Ata, now, no atzu lev yachdav. All of a sudden, this new thing, this unheard of phenomenon, all these goyim, who they fight each other and kill each other all the time, suddenly they've come together. What is the one thing that can unite all these people? Fighting against B'nai Yisrael. They have now put a covenant together. They put aside all their difficulties and disagreements and historical fights and rivalries. The one thing that can unite other nations is fighting B'nai Yisrael. That's how he understands no atu leid yachdav. Something I thought was scary how relevant it was. Okay. Now, Alecha Bris Yechrosu, that was the climax of those four psukim. Right? They're not fighting us, they're fighting you. So how does the Sepharno explain it? We'll look at the Sepharno, and then we'll look at Rashi. Rashi's going to be similar to the Sepharno, but he's going to just take it to the next level a little bit. Alecha Bris Yechrosu. Kisin Esem Imanu, says the Sepharno. Why do they hate us? Eina Ella Bishvilcha. We tell Hashem the reason why they hate us is because of you. There's no other reason. What is anti-Semitism about? Okay, it's not because we talk differently. It's not because we look differently. The thing that sets us apart, the reason why they're always trying to wipe us out, is because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mepnei she'anu mishtadlim lasos ritzoncha ulkayim torascha. We try to fulfill your will. We try to keep your Torah. And that is the one thing that they can never handle, right? The us being the Am HaNivchar, our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that relationship, the Sepharno explains they can't handle that. So when they come and they fight Am Yisrael, when all these enemy nations that are usually fighting each other come to attack us, they unite against us, they're not really fighting us, says the Sepharno. Really, they're fighting what we represent, and we represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's why we can tell Hashem he needs to get involved. It's like we're a proxy. They're fighting Hashem through fighting us, and therefore he needs to get involved. They're your enemies. I mean, how many times does the pasuk here have to stress that they're your enemies? Oyvecha yamayun, right? Your enemies are rising up. Misan echa, those who hate you are rising. Alecha bris yechrosu, they're making a covenant against you. Thilim is trying to bang this point home again and again and again. They are fighting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In a couple of weeks, we'll look at Tehillim Ayin Tes, and we'll see the idea clearly laid out over there. When Bnei Yisrael lose against their enemies, call that Achil Hashem. As kids, we're taught that, Achil Hashem, like what my Rabbi Rosenzweig describes, like the school bus, Achil Hashem, Akedosh Hashem, right? It's like, first time the little kids, okay, right, behave well on the bus, because you want to make a Akedosh Hashem for the bus driver. One of the buses in my kid's school is just sent back to school the other day because the bus driver said they weren't being safe. So that's a classic school bus chil Hashem. Behave nicely, right, so that the Gentile who's around, thinks that it reflects nicely on how Jews behave. And that's definitely true. Then as we grow older, we learn about the idea of Kiddush Hashem in cases where the Torah demands that we give up our lives. Right, the Kiddush Hashem of Rabbi Akiva, when he gives up his life, Al Kiddush Hashem, for a certain mitzvos. And there's a third area of dying Al Kiddush Hashem, the reason why we call the Chayalim their deaths Al Kiddush Hashem. Right, fighting to protect Am Yisrael. When Am Yisrael lose and Am Yisrael are embarrassed and humiliated in war, the Psukim think of that itself as a disgrace to Hashem. Right. Look at when they attack us, they attack what we're representing. When Bnei Yisrael are down in the dumps, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kav Yachol is down in the dumps. It's because of this close connection. When they attack us, they're attacking him. And if we're losing, then at least in their eyes, Hashem is losing as well. The Sepharno was saying, Alecha Bris Yechrosu, they only hate us because they hate you. Now, Rashi has one more comment. And I want to take this and then kind of dwell on it a little bit. Rashi says, Alecha Bris Yechrosu. Everyone has it? So what does he say? Eitza zo eina ala alecha. This plan is really against you. Lahashkiach es shimcha. They want your name to be forgotten. The pasuk said, lo yizacher shem Yisrael od. The name of Israel is not going to be mentioned again. But what's their real goal? The real goal is that Hashem's name should not be mentioned again. She'in ata karui elokim lahem. You're not called a god to them. They don't call out Yoke Vavke. Ela lanu, Elokei Yisrael. You're the God of Israel. Ume acher shelo yizacher shem Yisrael. Once they succeed, that the name of Israel, God forbid, would never be mentioned again. Af shimcha hagadol eino nizgar. Even Hashem's name is not going to be mentioned either if they are successful. So Rashi is saying that this proxy fight, when they attack us, they're really attacking Hashem, he extends that to the name. If you turn back for a second to the whole Tehillim. So I'm going to make 2 points about this. Number one, so why not just say it? Why not just say, Lo Yizacher Shem Hashem Od? So I think that's something we can't say that. It's something that's like too terrible. The pasuk is not even going to write that. We're not even going to acknowledge even the pasuk. We can write about what they want to do, that they want to say, lo yizacher shem Yisrael od. We're not even going to write what they want to do. That idea that Hashem's name, whenever we can live with us being gone, right? We can, if we have to lay down our lives, we can do that. But we're not even going to put pen to paper to say what they want to do to the Shem Hashem. Lo yizacher Shem Hashem od. That's what they want. We're not even going to give them, raise that as something they want to do. Okay, that's point one. Point two is that Rashi is talking about the interchangeability of Yisrael and Hashem. If the Shem Yisrael is gone, then the Shem Hashem is gone. Right? What the existence of one in the world depends on the existence of the other. Without us being around, nobody is going to call the Shem Hashem. Look at the two names. There are only two names that are described and that are mentioned in the whole Tehillim. Right? We have many, many nations coming up, but we don't mention their names. The only names we have are Shem Yisrael in Pasuk Hey. And then at the very end of the Mizmor, after we talk about Elokim, 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 finally at the close of the Mizmor, we bring Hashem's name back into the picture. Right? Shimcha Hashem. Shimcha Hashem we say twice. There's the Shem Yisrael, and there is the Shem Hashem. And those two are mutually dependent upon each other. That, I think, is a deeper message that Rashi is driving at over here. Okay? The last thing we'll see with this, by the way, is not only do we mention the Shem Hashem, but we talk about how our enemies in the future are going to try to seek out the Shem Hashem. It's going to be the perfect Midah Keneged Midah, right? Right now they're trying to wipe it out. In the future, we're davening for a full 180. Vivakshu Shimcha. They'll seek it. They'll know it in Pasuk Yud Zayin and Pasuk Yud Tes. So we have them coming out of this whole Gimel through Vav. Our enemies are really Hashem's enemies. We are a proxy for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when they go for the way they try to wipe out the Shem Yisrael, what they're really trying to do is wipe out the Shem Hashem. And that is why it is so important for Hashem himself to get involved. Okay. The Mizmor then goes to Psukim Zion through Tess, where we mention a whole motley group of enemies. So we're told, Ale Edom v'yishma'elim Moa v'hagrim. 1, 2, 3, and 4. So most of these we think we know who they are. Edom, those are the descendants of Esav. They live in Har Seir, below the Yam HaMelech. The Yishma'elim, we think we know where they live. They live out in the Saudi Arabia, basically. It's where, right? The dot mikra map has them over here in the bottom right corner. We know where the Arabs live. Moav lives due north of Edom. Ammon, Moav, and Edom live in like three down in a row. That's why when Bnei Yisrael are coming out of the desert, they're coming out of Midbar Paran. So they ask Edom, can we please pass through your territory? And Edom says, no. So then we ask Ammon and Moav, can we pass through your territory? And Ammon and Moav say, no. So then we have to go farther north, and then we go to the land of Sichon, and that's how we ultimately come into Eretz Yisrael. We cross through the territory that Sichon had taken from Ammon and Moab in a previous war, and that is comes back 300 years later when Yiftach is the Shofate, and Ammon wants that territory back. So we have those three. We have Ammon in the south of the Yam HaMelech. The north of them is Moab. North of them is Ammon. Who are these Hagrim? What are Hagrim? So Hagrim, the Mepharshim assume, are the descendants of Hagar. Apparently, Hagar had other children. This is a real support for the Rashi that Hagar is Keturah. Which we read, okay, fine. Hagar is Keturah. Then I was like, is that really the pshat that Hagar is Keturah? Well, since Hagar the Mepharshim say here, I think the Ibn Ezra says, either we must say that Hagar had other children before she became Sarah's Shivcha. Or the Hagrim here are some of those other, some of those other nations that Keturah has six children with Avram afterwards. So those are the two possibilities. So those Hagrim, it sounds like they're roaming around in the desert together with the Ishmaelim. Okay, then we have Gaval. Gaval, it's unclear who Gaval is. There are two options. One is that they're a nation in the north. One is they're a little nation in the south. Ammon, Amalek. Amalek is they live down in the Negev desert, basically. Peleshes, that's the Plishtim. You have those, you know, that's where modern Gaza is. Yoshvei Tzor. Tzor is in the north. Tzor is in Lebanon. So we're surrounded on all sides by enemies over here. That's what these two psukim are describing. We have Amalek and Edom and the Ishmaelim in the south. We have Ammon and Moab in the east. We have Tzur in the north. We have the Pelashes in the west. The psukim here are describing enemies on all four sides. And then Pasuk Tes, Gam Ashur Nilva Imam. They're also being assisted by Ashur. What's Ashur? Ashur is a superpower, which is all the way out to the west, right? They're not even a neighbor, but they are helping assist the other countries. The parallel to where we find ourselves in the modern day reality, where we're being facing a multi-front attack. You have the Chaylim stationed in the south and the Chaylim stationed in the north, and Chaylim also active in Yehuda Shomron. And at the same time, we also have a superpower that's out there, or a larger power at least that's out there, which is supporting the smaller ones, right? We have Iran we're dealing with. But it's scary. It's scary how the Pesukim here so closely parallel what we're facing our current day. We have the smaller local enemies, and we have the larger enemy, which is supporting them farther out to the east. It is these Pesukim where the different Mefarshim try to figure out when exactly this is being stated. So the Radak, who thinks that this was the time of Yehoshaphat, so he focuses that, hey, that battle was Ammon and Moab. The problem is, some of the other nations do not seem to have been involved over there. The idea that this is like just describing the classic, ultimate Jewish experience, we're always being attacked on all sides. It was really one which, at least I find very resonant. But as we saw, the Mefarshim had different approaches. Okay, so we're in trouble. We're being attacked all four directions. The parallel to our modern reality jumps off the page. Now let's turn to page 3, and let's turn to the second half of the Mizmor. Right, having described they're coming against us, and really they're coming against you, and we know who they are. Now the Navi can say, let's go. Right? Hashem, you've been quiet for too long. Pasuk Aleph, we said, you've been quiet, you've been quiet, you've been quiet. Don't be quiet, don't be quiet, don't be quiet. Finally, here we go. Asei lahem kimidyan kisisra chiyavin benachal kishon. Do to them like you did to Midyan, and like you did to Sisra and to Yavin and Nachal Kishon. Those are the battles. Midyan being defeated by Gidon, and Sisra and Yavin from the Canaanim, who were defeated by Barak and by Devorah and by Yael. What happened to them? Nishmedu be'ein dor. They were destroyed in ein dor. Rashi says, there's one of those ein yodea Rashis. All the parashah, I figure out what exactly is going on over here. Rashi says, I'm not sure which battle we're talking about. Ein dor is close to the site of both of the battles of Midian and of Sisera, but the Pesukim and Shoftim did not mention ein dor in either case. So it makes a lot of sense for either or both of them to have had battles happen there, but Rashi, with his classic intellectual integrity, tells us Enio Day. I'm not sure which one of these we're talking about. Okay, we don't need to be any smarter than Rashi. Hayudomen la'adama. What happened to our enemies after they lost these two battles? They were like dung in the fields. Mefarshim described pretty graphically. They were not buried. They were left to rot. Shisemo nedivemo. Leave them. Put their princes. Like Orev, Zev, Zevach, and Tzalmunna, those are the four princes of Midian who are captured and who are killed by Gidon and his army. So we want the enemies to be wiped out. We want the leaders to be wiped out. What did the leaders say? Asher Amru Nirshalanu Es Naos Elokim. They said we want to inherit the Naos, either the land of Hashem. Dat Mikra describes this as the grazing area of Hashem or the house of Hashem. Once again, what is the land of Hashem? Says Radak, for example, Eretz Yisrael. So the land of Israel, what does the Pasuk do over here? What does it turn it into? It's not Israel's land, it is Hashem's land. The same move that Tehillim is making this whole entire time. An attack on us is an attack on Hashem. An attack on our land is an attack on Hashem's land. The Naos, it's not the Naos Yisrael, it's the Naos Elokim. I didn't seem to be talking about this, but of all the miraculous victories that we had in our history, why does the Pasuk focus only on, or particularly on, Canaan and Midian? Right? It could have mentioned any of David's victories. It could have mentioned any of Yehoshua's victories. It could have mentioned what happens to, why Daka these two? Ehud, right? His defeat of Moab. There are other victories we had in plenty of examples we could have drawn on. So I would suggest the reason is because what sets these two aside from everything else is that when Ehud defeats Moab, Moab comes back. When David kills Goliath, the Plishtim come back. The only two battles we have in Tanakh, as far as I know, where we win and that nation never bothers us again, are Canaan with Devorah and Midian with Gideon. We never find Midian. Midian never attacks us after Gideon. His victory is a total victory. It is a permanent destruction. They never again come to invade. After Ya'al and Devorah and Barak destroy the army of Sisera, we never find Canaan fighting Bnei Yisrael. It is a permanent victory. I think that's why those are the two that we mentioned in particular. Because we're not just davening for Hashem to save us, as we're going to see in a minute when we turn to our current ask. We don't ask Hashem to save us. We're going to ask for more. We're going to be pretty bold with our requests. We are not going to hold back. Okay, let's go and see. Pasuk Yudalit, Elokai, right? My God. We began the Mizmor with Elokim, calling out to Hashem. Now, as we begin the intense part of the Tefillah, the current application, we go back to that. God, Shisemo Chagalgal. Make them like the Galgal, like the wheel. What is that exactly? Rashi describes this as the like the round, like the dandelion seeds, right? What happens to them when the wind comes along? Right, gone. Kekash lefnei ruach, or like the straw before the wind. Hashem wants that those scary enemies blow them away. What else should it be like? Keish tevar ya'ar uchalava telahid harim. The same way that a fire burns a forest, kain terdefim b'sarachov sevaschat ha'aleim. So too with your, chase them with your storm. So want Hashem to wind against them, burning storm. We want total destruction. The Malbim has a great insight. Earlier we mentioned, remember that Radak who said that they're taking counsel together, they're conspiring. Normally these people are at each other's throats, but what does the Malbim say here? Now they're all united to attack us. So the Malbim says, what happens when a forest burns? So he says, when a forest burns, Eish echad soreif es chaviro. One tree burns the next tree. Kain yarog ish es achiv. So he understands that we're asking Hashem to set our enemies against each other. Right? Just like one tree burns the neighboring tree, so too he thinks the idea here is that one enemy should fall out and kill the other enemy. This is probably the Malbim consistent because he ascribes this mizmor to Yehoshaphat's battle, which ended in a miraculous civil war between our enemies. Either way, it's a good thing to have in mind when we dive in this mizmor. We want Hashem to step in, and if part of that is some of these animals fighting each other, not tov manai. Okay, now Yud Zayin Yud Ches and Yud Tes. This is the close of the mizmor. Right. So first we have to Hashem blow them away, burn them away, storm them. Right. Now that's not enough. We don't just want Hashem to come in. Malay, we see the deep seated and principled rage that's here in this mizmor. This mizmor is not just it's not just desperation. It's not just fear. There's real principled anger. These enemies dared. They dared rise up against Hashem's people. Right? They dared rise up against Hashem. It's not enough for the threat to go away. That's not going to be a sufficient response to the crisis. If that was the case, the mizmor could have ended in Pasuk Tes Zayin. A threat comes, a threat goes away, and then that's it. We have the restoration of peace. But this war mizmor says there needs to be more than that. There needs to be justice. And therefore, Malei Fineihem Kolon, fill their faces with shame, Vivakshu Shimcha Hashem. We want them seeking Hashem's name. Okay? So far, if it ended there, okay, fine. The pasuk could have ended at Yud Zayin. If it ended at Yud Zayin, we'd say, Tshuva, our enemies rise against us, Hashem blows them away, they'll feel shame, they'll do tshuva. And what's going to happen after the battle? The survivors will become bali tshuva, and it's going to be all well and good. They'll have learned the evil of their ways, and they're never going to do it again, because now they're all going to be calling out in Hashem's name as well. Okay, problem is, the Mizmor does not end in Pasuk Yud Zayin. We have two more psukim. Pasuk Yud Ches. Yevoshu vibalu ade ad. They should be embarrassed and disturbed forever. Ade ad. We want this to be a permanent reality. Then not only should they be embarrassed, but v'yachberu v'yovedu. Right? They should be destroyed. We are davening for their permanent destruction. That's what we're not asking to, you know, we want them gone. Gone, not just gone now, but gone forever. I think the same way that, I think that's why we invoke Midian and Canaan. Midian and Canaan never come back after those victories. That's what we're asking for. V'yedu ki ata shimcha Hashem levadacha al yonah kol ha'aretz. And then they will know that your name is Hashem, and you are alone in charge of the world. So again, the Midah Keneged Midah, they wanted to wipe out Bnei Yisrael, they wanted to wipe out the Shem Hashem, in the end they're all going to know that Hashem is the one over the whole world. The obvious problem, though, in the Dot Mikra, I was very relieved when I saw him point this out, because I had this question, and I had an answer, and then the good news for me was he also had this question. The bad news for me was that he did not have my answer. So we'll go through his three answers, and I'll tell you what I was thinking. And then we'll close. Hold on a second. So in Pasuk Yud Zayin, the Vakshu Shimcha Hashem, right? We want them to seek Hashem. It sounds like we want tshuva. And then Pasuk Yud Ches, we say Yevoshu Yibalu Adei Ad V'Yachru V'Yavedu. We want them to be gone and destroyed forever. Well, which is it? Do we want them to reform and learn the error of their ways, or do we want them to be wiped out? Which is it?
So and if you opine on some of those lines, if that came to be true, then Yitzhak would be irrelevant. If they're gone, then...
Right, yeah, exactly. And what is it, right? And if they're gone, then how do I know that you're Hashem? How do I know that you're Hashem if you're gone? So, exactly. So, he asks that. And he says, Im tomar halo ne'mar le'il vivak shishimcha Hashem. So, how could they be destroyed if they're seeking Hashem? Okay, what are his answers? Answer number one, Yesh lomar shadvarim amurim ba'osem sheyamdu berisham v'lo yivak shishim Hashem. Answer one, our enemies are going to break down into two groups. Okay, the ones who do tshuva, so they'll seek out Hashem's name and they'll survive. And the ones who don't do tshuva, they're going to be destroyed. Right, so some of our enemies are going to be Pasuk Yud Zayin, some of our enemies are going to be Pasuk Yud Ches. That's one option. If that's the case, then I guess Pasuk Yud Tes, they'll know that you're Hashem, is going back. But a little awkward, because we have the Yud Zayin enemies, the Yud Ches enemies, and then Yud Tes goes back to Yud Zayin. It's a little uncomfortable, but that's his first proposal. Okay, his second one, Perish Acher, and this one I think of the three he has, this is the one that I like the most. Perish Acher, Heim Yivakshu Hashem Hashem, right? They're going to seek Hashem. No, seek. Aval Hashem lo yisratu lehem. Right. So we want them. We want it all. We want them to cry out for. I mean, it's kind of crazy, but we want them to cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, one, and then we want Hashem to say no, right? An kadei kach is the retribution and the justice that we want. We need them to realize that they were wrong. We need them to realize that they should be calling out to Hashem, and we don't want Hashem to say yes to them. Right? There's a time for rachamim. There's a time for forgiveness, and that is not now. Ella, right? V'yashmi deim. We want their destruction. His third suggestion he has, Perish Acher, Viovedu, Yinatel Kocham Lahara, that destruction doesn't mean that they'll be physically destroyed. It's like, you know, the liberal pshat. Yeah, it means that they won't have any ability to do bad anymore. Their ability to do bad will be destroyed, right? Like, the you know, degrade their military capability. Okay. He points out later on a very good proof for his second pshat, that we want them to seek out Hashem and yet be destroyed anyway, is this Pasuk Yud Tes. Because he says the last two lines over here, he says we find a similar phenomenon in Parshas Va'era, when Hashem tells Moshe, the beginning of Va'era, right? Here's the plan, you know, Paro said no to you, hey, you're going to come in, he's going to say no, there are going to be miracles, and there are going to be plagues, right? And then I'm going to take you out, right? At the beginning of the Parsha, when Hashem tells Moshe exactly what's going to happen in advance. So he says, "Me'in zematzina b'Torah." This is exactly what we find in the Torah. Be'avdan hamitzrim b'yamsuf. Interesting. He quotes in Parashas Bashalach. The same thing was in Vayera. I didn't realize he was quoting from Bashalach. The same thing is true there as well. V'yad'u Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. Right? They're going to be punished, and they're going to know that I'm Hashem. So, what does that mean? Meaning, as they're being destroyed, right? I guess the one he's quoting, as they are being drowned in the Yamsuf, they're not being saved, right? But they're going to know that as they're being destroyed. He thinks that's what's happening in the Mizpor over here. Okay, so those are his three suggestions. Again, either splitting the enemies into the Bali Tshuva and the non-Bali Tshuva, saying all of them, we want them to seek out Hashem, but be destroyed anyway, or don't destroy them, just destroy their ability to do evil. I think one more possibility, though, maybe, is that who says that in this moment of intensity and crisis and stress, that our responses have to be totally rationally coherent, right? We want two things. Do we want our enemies to realize that they are wrong and to realize that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is true and His Torah is true and we are His people? Yes, we do. Right? At the same time, do we want their total destruction? Yes, we're davening for that. Do those two have to actually fit together? Who says? Who says that we have to, we have to lay it out that both these are going to happen? These are two things that we're davening for. Maybe Hashem is going to do one. Maybe Hashem is going to fulfill our second tefillah. But those are both things that we want. I think maybe that's a way to read the Mizmor. This is a very emotional moment. These are things we feel that we need. These are things that we feel are both just. Okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could be the one to figure out how exactly to pull it off. But these are both very deep-seated and intense feelings that we have as our enemies are coming and attacking us for no reason, for no justification, in the most barbaric way imaginable. We're being surrounded on all sides. They're coming from the north, east, west, and south. There's nobody else. We're there by ourselves. All we have is a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And we turn to Him and we say, we are your people. Shimcha, right? They want to wipe out Shem Yisrael. We need the Shem Hashem. There's no one else. There's no one else to do it. You need to do it. And here's what we feel that we need. I think that's another way to understand what's happening. Is try to tap in. And what we're going through now, again, it's like exactly what's happening over here, right? This is a Mizmor, which is written so long ago. But top to bottom, it is exactly appropriate for us. So it's something that we'll continue to daven. Hopefully we do not need to daven it for much longer, and hopefully every item of it should be fulfilled. Mehera v'yameinu.